Let's introduce our keynote speaker this morning, loved by at least one, no, thousands, thousands.
Myself.
Yeah, that includes yourself, absolutely. Mr. Rusty Russell, please make him feel welcome.
James, so Revolution OS is actually, you're planning on touring the lugs with it as well?
Yeah, because we bought the tape, so we thought we'd hopefully try and send it around the lugs. It's a little shaky because it's down dubbed from NTC to PAL, but...
Yeah, cool. Yeah, as you can tell, I'm very prepared. Oh. I had nothing to do with the original title. So, one of the things I meant to do last night was come up with a better one. And there it is. Okay, it's gonna look like this. I'm saving the compulsory module rant till right at the end. So yes, you can leave then if you've already seen the light. Okay, standard introduction, who am I? For those of you who don't know me, I'm the author of Rusty's Remarkably Unreliable Guides. Several of them. I actually edited the FHS version 2.2, which taught me that standards are all about large groups of people with too much time on their hands. But most importantly for this group, I'm organizer of the Australian Linux Conference in 1999, which kicked all this off. And since then, I've managed to stand back and take credit for every successive year. I think that's quite an achievement. Okay. I also did some kernel stuff. Oh, shit, I should check this. Okay. Nothing. This will be fixed. So, there we go. Where are we? Okay. Yeah. This was... Yeah, long live Emacs. Who said that? Yeah, okay. Yeah, don't watch while I'm doing this, please. Okay, that should fix it. There we go. Oh, shh. Damn! Such a... Don't you love Magic Point? Oh, there we go. This is from last year's conference. In case you can't read it, I'll read it out to you. This is to... Dave Miller and Harold Velter as NetFilter maintainer. Hi guys, someone found a minor race in the NFSOC opt-on register at my kernel hacking tutorial, which has really happened. Somebody sort of hand up and said, isn't that racy, that example? And I went, was it? Oh, yeah. And I went, yeah, good point. Okay. Also, last night at the LinuxConf AU dinner, they auctioned off a t-shirt for EFA. I drank too much and said if it went over $1,000, I'd put the winner's name in the kernel sources. Please apply. And the patch looked like this. Okay. There is a proud tradition of irritating me at every single conference. The first one I ran around like a mad thing. Didn't get to go to anything, but also decided to deliver a tutorial, which I appeared for about half of. Why? No, that wasn't that time. I was I was actually working. I think it was 2001 where I wasn't sure what to submit, so I submitted three papers expecting them to choose one of them. They chose all three, and I thought, oh, that's a bit of a bugger. It's going to be boring listening to me talk. And then I saw the schedule And they'd scheduled all three of them at the same time. So I train wrecked the three talks together. And it was the section on Colonel Hackers Get the Babes, which has dogged my steps ever since. Okay. So last year I thought, you know, the Debian Minicon, they actually said, would you speak at the Debian Minicon? I thought, yeah, okay, no problem. So I demonstrated a Red Hat install. And I gave the final NetFilter talk that I said I was ever going to do, and so far that's shown to be true, on the future of NetFilter, which is basically Rusty going this way, NetFilter team going that way. And I gave a kernel hacking tutorial because there seemed to be a lot of interest in that kind of thing. So this year, the Debian Minicon said, we want you back. I'm like, you're armed this time, aren't you? And, you know, a lot of people wanted me to do the kernel hacking tutorial again. So I said, okay, I'm not going to do a keynote this time. And that was fine because the web page just said keynote one, keynote two, keynote three. Well, somewhere there was a race condition, and before that had all been sorted out, that we would switch keynotes and have a panel instead, it was pointed out to me that one, it had been published, two, we already had a panel, and three, they were planning on showing Revolution OS, which I've kind of seen and it's okay. But I thought people actually paid money to come here and sit through my drivel, so I'm going to give them a keynote. So I decided I would do a keynote, but of course, by then they'd printed an insert with the new, updated, non-rusty keynote version. So the resulting chaos is kind of my fault. So next year I'm not going to speak at all, and you heard it here first. Okay. So after a couple of years of deep thought on the whole kernel hacking, you know, sexy thing, I've come to the conclusion that kernel hacking is for wimps. Right. It is actually true that toolchain hackers get the base. Let me show you why. This is from GCC. This is old C expand expra. No. The best bit I like about this piece of code is about there, halfway down, there's a comment. And it's quite a wordy comment. And it has no spelling errors. And, you know, it says expand express statement calls free temp slots after every expression statement. We must call push temp slots here, otherwise any temporaries in use now would be considered out of scope after the first expra statement from within the statement expra. And you read the code and that is basically what it does, I think, and you're sitting there going, wow. I've read that comment four times and I still don't know what the hell they're talking about. Now, this is a short function, right? I mean, look at that. If it's a call expra, and the tree code of the tree operand of expra 0 is an address expra, and the tree code of the tree operand of the tree operand of expra 0 is a function decal, and it's a built-in, well, the tree operand of the tree operand is actually a decal built-in, and the decal built-in class of the tree operand of the tree operand is the built-in front-end. Wouldn't want to make that mistake. You return C expand built-in expra target, I know, T-mode modifier. Otherwise, you're bought, because that's obviously wrong. And you'll notice that, you know, this is in GNU indent style, and it's, you know, it's K and R C, so it'll compile everywhere. That's why these guys get the babes. There's another level there. Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Trivial Patch Monkey. You've heard me mention it a couple of times. Alan actually mentioned Trivial Patch Maintainer. I don't use that phrase because I think maintainer means you actually do some work. Monkey is a lot better suited to what I do with the Trivial Patch stuff. And here's where it began. Who here has crossed emails with Rob Landley before? Yeah, okay, I know you did. Yeah, okay. So, yeah. Everyone knows my rule about flameage, right? I get one flame a year. Okay. Look at the date on this. 28th of January. It's too early. I can't do it, right? Patch penguin proposal. Okay, right now. So, he sends out this post saying, this is getting ridiculous. Patches from maintainers being dropped on the floor on a regular basis. You can almost hear the panic behind the keyboard. This is burning out maintainers, increasing the number of different kernel trees. Not yet a major fork, but lots of cracks and fragmentations are showing under the stress. Linus needs an integration with it, and he needs one now! Yeah, okay. And, you know, it continues on for pages on this, you know. This is just the executive summary. Okay. Yeah. That's right. Yes. So, who got involved in the thread that evolved? Well, you know, Linus, Alan, and Ingo all weighed in. Yeah, you know, well, fair enough. They usually have something interesting to say. Alviro. Greg! You're in this thread. Andrew Morton, Andy Clean, Paul McCarris. Okay, so, you know, some of the maintainers got involved. Eric Raymond, Larry McVoy, Martin Dalecki, always, you know, it's good at putting fuel on the fire. It's King Dalton Phillips, Christoph Helwig, Bill Davidson, we'll be seeing more of him later. Quack. Okay. Right. Is there anyone in this room who is not in this thread? Yeah, that's one. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so David Miller went up in my eyes because Dave's not on the list. Okay. I am also not on the list, right? Because I'm still thinking, it's February, it's too early. Okay. So, okay, containing. Of course. It's actually surprisingly low when I grep for it. I was actually really surprised. And there were no other noticeable swear words. One occurrence of the word volunteer, and it was used in the sense of somebody should volunteer. And it goes without saying, zero lines of code. Okay. So once this had all died down, I posted new thread. Because people were complaining that patches were being dropped, so I said, okay, I'm going to set up this trivial patch, one line of documentation spelling fix kind of thing. You know, I'll ack your patch and I'll keep track of whether it either no longer applies to the kernel or it goes in. You know, so basically just retransmitting stuff that you can just shoot off and forget. Okay. Yes, I am not a bot. This is actually really important. People send me emails going, I sent this patch to you 12 hours ago. Why haven't you answered yet? Okay. And, that was 12 months ago. I've only got stats for the last 7 months, but we've had 1,087 patches through, of which some were against both, that's why those stats overlap, 10,071 against 2.5, 593 against 2.4. I had some against 2.2, but generally I've dropped them because there's not. Okay, so who's sent a patch for Trivial Patch Monkey? Okay, that's actually pretty good. So, and of the, you look at the include rate, 669 got included, some of them failed. Now, of course, what happens is you get a failure message, and sometimes you just retransmit, you know, you'll update it because something unrelated is broken. And similarly, 2.4 numbers are slightly down. Okay. Now, a side effect of this was really interesting. I'm pumping all these patches to Linus. And Larry McVoy posted this graph of the major kernel patch sources since BitKeeper started getting used. Okay, so you look at that curve and you go, oh, that's really interesting. And so, you know, there was an ensuing discussion about the curve in which Linus weighed in. You know, and someone pointed out there's like an exponential progression. Okay, And so the bit I like is, you know, the last paragraph. Yeah. So personally, I get a bit nervous about pretty graphs. They seem to say so much, they clearly don't tell enough, which can be a bit dangerous if somebody tries to take them too seriously. But it's simple enough that you think you get the real truth. Okay. This is April. So this is my response. Shut up, Linus. They're obviously revealing a deeper truth. 12th best kernel coder in the world! Okay. Since then, mainly because of this comment, we've changed it so patches from the Trivial Patch Monkey actually get credited to their original source. Yeah. Yeah, I know. No, I still got those ones for free. So. Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit. Thank you. I'm going to talk a little bit about optimization, okay, because we all love optimization. I sent a patch, and it's not really important what the patch is. It was a relatively trivial cleanup, going through changing all the, getting rid of CPU number map and logical map, and changing everything to use 8-bit iterators. Okay, so Andrew Morton responds and says, you know, this patch introduces a non-zero amount of bloat, quotes the NTFS buffer compression. Instead of allocating one for every online CPU, we're allocating 32 of these things, NR CPUs of them. He says, and slowdown. Because I took out a loop that only used to go from 0 to the number of CPUs you actually had, which is probably like 1 or 2 or 4, all the way to the maximum number you could have, which is 32 at this time. You know. He says, and for the majority of SMP machines, it doesn't give anything back. Is there a way of optimizing this? Okay. Okay, Andrew should know better. So I, you know, posted it, you know, like I realize it's late to be continually worrying about these possible micro-optimizations, but I challenge you to actually benchmark the difference between the two pieces of code, especially in this context. You know, so let's not perpetuate the myth that everything in the kernel needs to be tuned to the last cycle at all costs. Okay. Now, one does not wade out into Linux kernel with a statement like this without being prepared, because you know what's going to happen next. Dave's going to weigh in. And Dave's like the master of micro-optimization. Okay. So, and he's way brighter than I am. So at this stage, I'm completely outgunned. Right? So you know. His final paragraph. Remember, it's the anal every micro-optimization at all costs, people, that kept the kernel source sane and from running out of control bloat-wise. Yes, I realize it's a pain in the ass because you might have to use your brain from time to time to re-implement things to make the cycle counters happy, but such is life. That's a gentle claim. Okay. So, okay. I knew this was going to happen. Right. So I address the space optimization, and I say, well, actually, we could change that code. And this is what I'm... Okay, there's an important difference between something that is unoptimized and something that is unoptimizable. And it's really, really important. If your design's unoptimizable, that's bad. You know, if it's just unoptimized, that's easy to fix. Right. Okay. And so his anal micro-optimization thing, okay, it also gave us crap like net IPv4 route.c's IP root act read. Right? Because I had found this a while back, this great piece of code that looked like somebody had tried to really optimize it for SMP, and I was waiting to use it. Now, modify Dave a bit at the end of this email. So, you know, this is always really important. You go, look, I know it's not you that's the problem. You're okay. You know, it's the other people. Right. And I recommend you have that to be cool list tattooed somewhere. You know, for those of you who are kernel coders, you know, this is a really nice list of stuff that, you know, you should do, because otherwise people accuse you of not being elite. And you know, when you post that all-important optimization for Strassisman, and you don't use all of these, right, you're going to be flamed to a crisp. Okay, so Dave backs off. I've got him here, right? Oh, that's far from an attempted optimization. Clean-up patches are always happily accepted. In fact, most of the patches I do these days are clean-up patches. Backpedal, Dave. Yes, excellent. Unfortunately, of course, he's turned it around. Now I have to fix it. Just when I thought I was ahead. So this is the old code. Oh, no, hold on. Oh, okay, so I post. And I'm like, you've made me do work, you bastard. I was having fun just whining. So I got the opportunity to say, I was giving you the benefit of the doubt that both the design, binary data out of proc, and the code, the ifdef, the CPU logical map 0, and the 256 magic number sprinkled everywhere, was some insane attempt at speed rather than a demonstration of sheer programming idiocy. I stand corrected. This papers over the damage. So this is the old code. What it's trying to do is sum up the route stats for every CPU, of which there are 256 of these things, which is the magic number you see through there. Sum them all up and copy them out to the user. Okay. So firstly, if the length is not greater than 0, we just go out. So only if there's actually, you know, a length that they want, if we bother doing anything at all. And then what we do is we memcopy the CPU 0. And then we go, oh, but if there's more than one CPU, firstly, if we config SMP, otherwise we know CPU 0 is the only one. So you know, if we config, you know, if def config SMP, and there's more than one CPU, or the CPU 0 we just copied is not the CPU, the first CPU, which can happen, then we go through and we do this cycle count here where we actually count length is divided by 4 because, of course, these are ints, they're 4 bytes long. We go through from 1 to n CPUs, we do the logical map. If it's CPU 0, we've already done it, so we don't add it in. Otherwise, we figure out where is the integer that we're copying. The CPU array that we're copying, and we iterate through, okay? So that's the code. This is what it became, right? Okay. You copy in the first CPU. You iterate through the rest of the CPUs, and you add those in, return the length. Okay. Now, I don't actually know who originally wrote that code, but I still assume that somebody was really trying to optimize the common case of unit processor really hard. But that's the compiler's job here. Right? And in fact, it will do a really good job. And that's a lot clearer than the previous one. So clear that I actually found a bug in it. Anyway, but in there was a comment. And the top comment was that one there. This code sucks, but you should have seen it before. And Dave, the graceful guy that he is, just sort of applied. Done. Okay. So in Kernighan and Pike, practice of programming, they list the first principle of optimization. And that really is it. Don't. Or as I like to do, wait till the users complain and then optimize. Okay. Now, point to this. There's another Kernighan quote that actually MBP had in his SIG for a while. Debugging is twice as hard as writing the code in the first place. Is there anyone here who would significantly disagree with that statement? Okay, only twice, okay. Kernighan's smarter than we are, so for him it's probably only twice. Right, okay. Therefore, I don't think I need to spell out the optimization corollary here, right? Okay. I've had my optimization rant. But I was just warming up. I recently made a significant change to the module code in the kernel. And I'm going to give you an example. We're going to do this backwards. I'm going to give you an example of one of the bug reports that I got. So somebody did a make modules install and noticed that they've got all these undefined symbols, right? Comments, yeah, he CC'd me and he said, look, looks like there are a few more locking changes that need to be made. Yeah, Frank's pretty cluey. Sure enough, just for the record, I replied and said, yeah, this is SMP, okay, right. Yeah, the warnings are perfectly correct. Those files actually do need fixing. Okay, that's fine. Just for the record, there we go. Okay. Right. That was basically my response. I was just completely flabbergasted. I'm like, okay, so when am I going to fix it? And I went and played pool a couple of times, and I came back, and I thought, okay, well, that's it. If someone sends you a mail like that, then there are probably a whole silent majority of people who have the same misunderstanding, and you should, you know, really spell it out for them. And, And this is true. If you destabilize some part of the kernel, then naturally, from then on, the first thing people suspect is that part of the kernel's got something wrong with it. So, you know, at this stage, I was actually getting more and more report on kernel module bugs that had nothing to do with me, right? Which is quite rewarding, really. When you pass that 50% point, when they're actually other people's fault, you start to feel that, you know, your code doesn't suck so badly. And this is one. These drives are actually broken, right? It's like, you know, they are actually broken. They give warnings on compile. If you build them into the kernel, your kernel won't link. And if you even if you know you compile them as modules, they won't insert. They really don't have, we don't have these functions anymore. They do not exist. These modules are broken. This code does not work. Okay. Hope that clarifies. It's like, well, you know, it's huge paste. You know, if they didn't work before, then I can believe you. But you know, if you broke them, if they've been broken since then, you know, I would certainly suspect. It's like, no, we're not talking about suspect here. I know they're broken, right? I'm not just speculating. Okay. I didn't reply to that, I think. Okay. So, stepping backwards. 2.5.47 saw module loading basically move entirely into the kernel. I had been setting these module patches to Linux for months at this stage. Just retransmitting it. Linux plus ply. And I was in Japan. We went down for breakfast, and Anton goes, Linus applied your patch, and I went, which one? And he went, the module one, and I went, holy. Because I didn't have time to go up to my room and grab my mail. Because we were headed straight to the airport to jump on a plane to Spain. Olé. So that we did, and the whole time I'm thinking. We get to the hotel in Spain. I'm going to have to read my mail sooner or later. And so having obviously not slept on the plane, and having got very little sleep on the Japan trip, I then proceeded to do an all-nighter on my laptop with no test box, flailing through the reports of people going, you know, what's happened, why doesn't this work, et cetera, as you, you know, explode from one user, me, to you know, 100 angry kernel hackers. So, you know, that was the moment that Linus chose. And I had to give a tutorial there as well. I don't even remember what I said, frankly. I think someone asked a module question. I just curled up into a ball and cried for half an hour. Okay. So, most people, rationally enough, want to move things out of the kernel. Now, the kernel is hard. It's hard to change. It's hard to deal with in the first place. It's hard to debug. Things go horribly wrong when it breaks. As a general rule, you want to move things out of the kernel. So let's look at what things were like before. The kernel provided four entry points in 2.4, and in previous kernels, pretty much. You had create module, which said, I have a module. It is this big. Where are you going to put it when I give it to you? You had a create module call, and it would go, OK, not a problem. Allocate some space. Return the address. Then you had init module, which said, OK, now I've done all the linking, and I've fixed the module up. It's ready to go into that location that you promised me. Here it is. And that's init module. And that's about, you know, 50 lines and 230 lines. Delete module is really simple. It's like, OK, I want to get rid of the module. It's this name. Find it. Get rid of it. Okay. Then you have a query module, because when you're doing linking in user space, you need to find out if this module needs symbols from other modules. You really need to know where those things are so you can do linking. You need a whole heap of stuff that you can query. And we used to just use proc ksims, but there were some problems with that. So in came a query module syscall. That's 270 lines. So the user space can ask, oh yeah, and so what? Who provides this symbol? Because I need to know, because, you know, who is it? Oh, yeah, and where is it? Where did you end up putting that? Okay, so we can link that in. A lot of stuff back and forth like that. Prog modules, which is just the list of what modules, you know, are happening and what stage they are and everything else. Prog ksims, which is another, you know, which is all the kernel symbols. You can also get that through query module, though. Okay, so, and there's the line counts. And, of course, there's all support functions and stuff. But roughly speaking, kernel module.c is 1,284 lines. You know, I rewrote it to do a lot of this in the kernel. And I got rid of a couple of syscalls, because you just say init module, here's a module, go. Now, that blew out to 360 lines. Delete module increased as well. It was, I think, 80 lines. It's gone up to 100. Proc modules, however, shrunk, because it's a little bit simpler. We have no query module syscall. We have no proc ksims. But we do have arch-specific code. Each architecture is different in the way it does linking. So you've got to go through all the architectures and write that little bit that does the linking, which is not always so little. For i386, there's 113 lines of code just for i386 in the arch subdirectory that actually does the linking. Now, kernel-module.c is now 1,500 lines. So, you know, it's basically gone up by 250 lines. But instead of just using a spin lock to protect the reference counts, I invented a new lock, because that's cool. It's called a BOGO lock. And the right side of the BOGO lock is 150 lines of code. And that was independent. I also put config ksim support also went into the kernel. That's another 70 lines of code. And there are a couple of cleanup patches that cut another 30 lines off that are still pending. Right? So in practice, you add up those sums, and we went up a little bit for x86, because you have to add in 113 lines. We added about 100 lines of kernel code. That's not a good thing. It's not something to be proud of. Another 100 lines of kernel code, every bit counts. Okay. However, I recently did PowerPC 64. And we had to add the arch-specific linking functions, right? PPC 64 is a little bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for, Anton? Baroque, yes, architecture. Instead of 113 lines on x86, it's 369 lines to link the damn thing. However, there's also a 32-bit compatibility wrapper so that 32-bit code can also insert modules, because you can run all the PPC 32 stuff on PPC 64 without any issues at all. That was 420 lines of code, which now shrunk down to 32 lines of code. So despite putting in all this linking functionality of 369 lines of code, we still won on PPC 64. Okay. So they actually won about 100 lines total. Okay, so you know the kernel, I think I've made my point, it's a bit of a wash. Let's look at user space. And you know I don't like to do that, but we will here. The 2.5 module init tools is 3,000 lines of code. Modutils is what we use in 2.4. 23,000 lines of code. Okay, so we swapped 100 lines of kernel code, give or take, for 20,000 lines of user space code. Okay. Those numbers are, in fact, a little unfair. Module init tools is not as complete. We may add another 500 or 600 lines, 1,000 lines maybe of code. We may go up all the way up to 4,000 lines of code. Can you read that? Bugger. Yeah, I know. But take my word for it, that is a fully functional insmod. Okay. 2.5, that is insmod on one page. And if you stand here, you can read it perfectly. But it's three system calls. You say, pull in the mod, like, open the module file, and this handles all the error cases. Open the module file, suck it in, and say, kernel, please insert this. Okay. And that's a syscall down the bottom. Okay. I can hand that out if you want later. The question then goes, what was wrong with the old code? And you look at the top of 2.4's module.c and you see that comment, originally by Anonymous. And there seems to be a real problem when code just accretes. And new people come along and go, doesn't really have a maintainer. I want to take it in this direction for a bit, and they drop it again. Right? The module code kind of did this. Right? It started really early on as this cool hack because we could do this. And the axiom has always been that linking doesn't belong in the kernel. None of the kernel's business. We should put that out in user space. But an interesting thing happens when you take something that's logically a single function, like insert this module in the kernel, and you choose some arbitrary line for religious reasons, and you split it down the middle and move half of it up to user space. Because suddenly then, you actually have to write code here to talk to that half. They can't just function call, right? User space kernel. So you write some code. You write a little bit more code that can talk to user space. And then on the user space side, you write the code that can talk to the kernel. Okay, but you're probably still ahead. But then the kernel bit changes, and the user space code has to talk the new stuff and the old stuff, and the older stuff, and the other stuff, and that weird other architecture that somebody introduced, and that bug we introduced and couldn't fix. And then you look at the kernel side and you go, wow, I'd really like to change the way we do reference counting. Bugger. I have to not only change the kernel, I have to change user space, right? Because that is so incredibly intimate with the particular kernel version that you can't fix things. You can't just change things. You can't do a new release and go, here it is, right? Because everybody has to also update their modutils. So what you end up doing in the kernel is having all this compatibility code as well, in case they hand you a module that doesn't have the new features. So you end up growing with these interfaces on both sides, right? When I first looked at this, I went, so how bad would a link, I mean, I wanted to change the code, and I saw what was going on, and I went, I'm going to have to wade through this, and then I'm going to have to wade through user space. How bad would it really be to have an in-kernel linker? And I wrote it, and it came out to 113 lines, and I went, what the were we thinking? Right? Does anyone have any questions? No, that's good. Excellent. Right. Oh, look. Oh, yes. Question. How big is I64? Okay. This is actually a very good question. So when I did this, I did it at x86. I thought, well, that's easy. Let's work our way up, because I knew at the other end of the range was IA64. So I did IA32, and I did PPC, which is a little bit harder. And I did PPC64, which is a little bit harder. You saw 369 lines. And then I did IA64. The IA64 implementation I have at the moment is actually not perfect. It requires another stub because you've got to jump all the way through stubs back and forth. So it's currently 500 lines. It's probably going to be 550 at the end. So it's going to be the biggest, right? They are going to have a net loss because although they've got the 32-bit compatibility code, that 420 lines, they're going to gain probably 100 lines of code. I know. So what's really interesting is after I'd written this, I got mail from Andy Clean going, thank God. Because x86-64, Andy's hammer, is really, really, really compatible with x86. They're proud of it. It's good. Except the x86 module loader for 2.4, which does all the work in kernel space, sees x86-64 modules and has no clue what to do with them. So it's like, it's completely compatible, star. Unless you use modules. But that's okay, nobody uses modules, right? So he had this problem. It was like, he had to, basically, in order to have this transparently, he was going to have to convince everybody to ship a 64-bit understanding version of the module utilities on all the x86 boxes, right? Just in case somebody wants to load it on x86-64. Not going to happen. You saw my insmod, right? It does not care what it's inserting into the kernel. We can change that. It could be 64, it could be 32. It'll just work. Right? It also means, anyone here use BusyBox? Why doesn't BusyBox have insmod? Oh, 23,000 lines of code might give you a hint. Okay. Now it can be done. in a handful of lines of code. Now, that actually works out, that version, to about 506 bytes of code. For the BusyBox guys, that's probably a bit of an ask. But I think if they pare it down, they can probably get under 300 bytes, and maybe that's worth it in order to get module support. I don't know, right? I would love to see somebody try to do that to the previous code. That would be an impressive hack. Okay. So we've also, of course, gained future-proofism. We have then gone nuts changing everything inside the kernel because we can. We can change the module structure. We can change all that. And we don't have any corresponding user space changes that are required in general. So we've gained a lot of flexibility. There are other architectures that came forward. The V850, it's like a little embedded processor. I'd never heard of it either. As a maintainer called Miles Barter, I'd never heard of him either. They prepend underscores to their symbols because that used to be a cool thing to do in the 70s. And he sent me this patch because when we do symbol lookups, we don't prepend an underscore. And so he'd introduced this arch-specific function. And I said, well, you could just do have a module symbol prefix that everyone else doesn't define and you define to underscore. And you know, you change two lines and it'll do the list. And he said, I thought about that, but it seemed too easy. Because I did this on the 2.4 module code, and your code is so much cleaner. And I'm like, yes, yes. The other thing that was interesting is that while I got a lot of flack over it, I got very little flack from the architecture maintainers. Because they're the people who had actually read the modules code and had to maintain that stuff outside the kernel, as well as reading the new code. So those guys are actually generally really supportive in general. PPC64 had an issue because you saw the function call where they had init module and it says, where are you going to put the module? Well, if you're a 32-bit int mod, it can only return 32 bits for the address. And so what they do currently is they go, well, we know the kernel starts here, so we'll just add that on the end. Except they want to move the kernel. Bugger. All these things started coming out after I'd written it. So it's the right thing. And if anyone disagrees, they're an idiot. Yeah. In general, no. The question of whether things should migrate from user space into the kernel in general, we have been correct in saying that it's usually a bad thing to put things in the kernel. It has generally been accepted that it's a bad thing. Moving them out is better than moving them in. But it's not a religion. You see numbers like this and you go, let's not take this too far. There's a line between a general strategy that's good and dogma, right? And in the linking shouldn't be done in the kernel case, a lot of people have stepped into dogma, right? And they refused to step back and think about it for a while. Now, that said, oh, the kernel source tree, right? I was getting to that. Kernel source tree, okay. We've recently had Klibsy. Sneak in there, right? Not entirely, right? There's a user subdirectory, right? So, you know, there's hints that this stuff is coming, which is the feeling that, yeah, some stuff is tied too intimately to the kernel. I wouldn't mind moving detmod back into the kernel source, because that's the one that actually grovels through modules to figure out what they need and what they supply, which is logically tied to the module structure. Whereas modprobe and insmod, in fact, do not know anything about the modules they're inserting. Module are a couple of really hacky arguments. So, there's a debate. In practice, it's really hard, because if you control the release cycle externally, you can release it whenever you want. If you've got to send patches through Linus, that can be less than timely. So there's a practical issue in there as well. But I can't see a huge scope for becoming FreeBSD and shipping all of user space in one big, collection. I don't think that will happen. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, you do something like this, and you know, you get thousands of flame wars, and you stop reading Linux kernel and the whole bit, and nutballs come out on both sides. There's one particular, for the first time in my life, I actually kill-filed someone. It was like, it's all wrong, it's all wrong, it's all wrong, and you explain it to them five times, and then you go, too hard. On the other hand, Ted Cho came out on the sort of the good nutball side and went, cool, we can do digital signatures for modules now. I didn't bring that up because if somebody says, why are we doing this? Why are we moving to the kernel? I go, so we can do digital signatures on modules. They'll kick me out, okay? It's actually a really interesting idea. I know some distributions are considering doing that just so they know. That's really cute. The other thing is the mod versions rewrite, which Kai is hopefully slaving away doing now, because it involves a lot of makefile and make stuff, and Kai's the make guy. We previously had this mod versions concept where you'd say, I want more information about every symbol than normal so that if somebody changes something critical in the kernel, my module will no longer insert. The way it did this was to basically have this header file that was generated, which had all these hash defined, so hash defined printk to printk underscore r xyzzy01017783 12. And then if your module used printk underscore r xyzzy whatever I said 03, it would refuse to load because it would say undefined symbol, right? Done. Now this damage spread to the make files. If you export a symbol for use by kernels, you have to put it in a special list in the make files so that the scripts that generate this header can actually find it. And that's kind of back, you know, so there's back pressure to distort the infrastructure, and you always have to worry when that kind of stuff happens. There's no really clear way to say just insert it anyway and force it. So what we have is currently a really hacky prototype that you have the compiler actually compile everything up first. And every time you export symbol, you drop into a special section to say, this file exports a symbol. And then you have your VM Linux. And then you go through that section, which you can then throw away, which has all the files that have symbols. Done. So you remove the makefile hack for a start. And for each of those, you go through and you find all the export symbols, you find all their versions, and you produce a table. This printk has this version number, ... You put that in your kernel. You do the same thing for every module. And so in the modules load, you go, do you have a .version section, or a .modversion section, I think it's called, or under mod versions, whatever I call it. Okay. So do you have this? If you do, great. Let's check all the versions of every symbol that you use, does it match? Also, every symbol you export, the future modules will check. If you fail that, it says, I'm not going to load the module. Your versions are wrong. Now, if you don't have a version section, it goes, I'm going to let you load the module, but I'm going to taint the kernel. And I'm going to tell you, by the way, you've just tainted your kernel. Tainting usually means that it comes out in all the oops reports and stuff. People go, tainted kernel, I'm not going to touch it. You force something in. So what happens is, modprobe then has an option to say force. And force looks for a .version section and removes it, or renames it, and hands it to the kernel. So what happens is, somebody compiles a module up for me, and it's got version information. Let's say I don't have version information. I insert it in my kernel and it just goes. Doesn't know anything about the version section, that's fine. If I do have a version kernel, I modprobe it, and the kernel says, no. Version of symbol printk is wrong. I go, okay. I mean, I really want to insert it, so I go modprobe-f. Okay, and then it goes, okay, you said so, inserting it, but I'm tainting the kernel for you. Okay, so it's really clean. It means that we can remove this export obs crap from makefiles. It means that you can compile up mod versioned objects, or kernel modules, and hand them out to people who haven't got version kernels, and they're playing with fire, but, you know, it'll still work. And it means there's a clean way of forcing it if you want to force module insertion. So that's one of the things that came out that we kind of, you know, it was a spin-off from this. Okay. Any other questions? I'm sorry, was I too loud? Yeah. What about the rest of them? Okay, so I had x86, Spark, Spark 64, PPC, PPC 64, and the IO64 one, okay. I kind of had like a reasonable range to convince myself it could be done. The really problematic architectures, of course, are PA risk, as always, which is still really difficult. MIPS is pretty straightforward. Alpha's already done. ARM's done, I think. 68K, I've seen patches for. I don't know whether they went in. Most of the architecture maintainers went, yeah, okay, not a problem. We look at the old user space one, we look at the kernel space one. Oh, this is easier. Did the relocations code. Done. A couple of them required extra, they had to frob things a bit harder because they needed extra space in the module to do special stuff. PPC does that, PPC 64 does that, so people have examples where they can see, okay, they do it this way, we'll use that. No architecture maintainers have come forward and said, oh no, there's this huge problem. And Richard Henderson actually has been really good. It's going, okay, well, this architecture is going to have this problem. That he spotted a couple of things in the code that he wanted fixed in a general way. And other than that, if Richard Henderson says it's good for all architectures, I believe him. He's one of those, you know, toolchain hackers, okay? Spotted by the crowd of babes. Okay, so yeah. The other architectures are coming along. But I mean, some of them don't even compile in a tree at the moment, so, you know, if the maintainers really slack, what can you do? If they ask me for help, then I'll usually, you know, if I can get a user space login, I can just frog around with it for a while. Yep. Ah, yes. So, there are several problems when you change fundamental infrastructure. Firstly, there are like 1,600 modules, so in the kernel sources, and there's one of everything. You go, surely no module author would be stupid enough to do, yes, there's going to be one. You know. It's like, you know, nobody's used that since one point. No. There's going to be three. Okay. So you had to deal with some of that. And some stuff I just went, no, that no longer makes sense, I'll just break it. Yeah, when we're talking like two modules, I went, no. You're below the 0.1% barrier. I'm just going to throw you away. Especially when you're doing something stupid anyway, like using, you know, get module count as an L value. Anyway, so yeah, I'm serious. Okay. So that was bad enough. And then, of course, you get the people doing third-party modules. You know, these are out-of-tree, source-available modules. And what they've done generally is, rather than using the kernel make files, they had their own scripts to build the modules. And it wasn't so much the original patch that broke them. But once we had the freedom to then frob around with the way modules are built, you know, Kai and I have gone off and done more, you know, changes. It's increasingly gone back and broken them, because they didn't build their modules exactly the same way we did in the kernel. The way to do that is basically to encourage them to use the kernel make files to build their own modules, and things should work, because then as we frob things, they'll keep up. Then there's the third category. I got email from a company who said, we have a binary-only driver, and we've tried really hard to make sure it inserts, you know, it works on as many different kernels as possible, SMP, non-SMP, different number of CPUs configured. You know, you fucked us over. I mean, you've messed us up. Because in the middle of the module structure, which you now have to supply as a module, there's an NRCPUs array. And they want to populate some fields after it. So that's going to move depending on the configuration. And they said, could you change it so those fields are at the end? I could. moral is, releasing binary-only drivers is hard. I am not going to lift a finger to help you. If you do it, more power to you. But No, I refuse to change a single line of code for that. In this case, it was a little bit more difficult to refuse. I'll let you read between the lines on why that was, but so far I've stuck with my guns. Okay. Any other questions? Oh, we're done. Excellent. Thank you very much.